I love being a dad. Right now, being a dad means being the second coolest person on the entire planet. Mom comes first, of course, but that doesn't bother me a bit because she deserves it. But when they come running to me, arms outstretched, there's nothing like it. Fortunately, I've worked with young people long enough to know that I better enjoy it now. Sooner than I can blink, they will be 13, and I will be magically transformed from the second coolest person on the planet to the stupidest human being on the face of the earth. It's not their fault. Parents just don't understand. My grandpa didn't get the Beatles. My dad doesn't get Metallica. And I surely don't get Justin Timberlake. That's just how the world works. The silver lining is that somewhere around or after your college years, parent stock starts to rise. Slowly they begin to look less and less like lumbering fools. Until one day, if you're lucky, a little light goes on. And you think, wow, they're human beings. And they're kind of smart in their own way. Who knew? Unfortunately, the same process doesn't apply in the realms of politics and religion. Why bother to have a discussion when you can just play gotcha? The political end of this, as shown by the current presidential race, is so obvious that I will not bore you with it. But religion is no better. Religious radio makes a pile of cash year in, year out, with a very simple formula. Take something someone else said, run it out to the absurdest possible conclusion, and mock it. Even in seminary, it's not much better. At least there, they force you to cite your sources. But that didn't stop me from setting up a straw man argument or two. It's much easier to oversimplify someone else's work and then knock it down than to reach inside it, understand it. Especially when time is short, your grade is on the line, and the person you're studying is Karl Barth. A straw man paper, well constructed and submitted on time, earns you a moderate grade. But to step inside the mind of a great human being, to step inside the mind of any other human being and see the world through their eyes, you could take a lifetime and never be done. So we settle for naught. We speak in sound bites. Don't you understand, they say, a woman has a right to choose. No, you don't understand, they respond. It's a baby, not a choice. But don't you understand? Your evolutionary theory is undercutting the faith. To which they respond, no, you don't understand. Your creationist pseudoscience is undercutting my foundations. Don't you understand? I'm trying to save you from hell. No, you don't understand. Your constant badgering makes me feel like I'm already there. And round it goes. You even find it in Scripture, especially in the Old Testament, when the poets weep and the prophets shake their fists at the sky. Where are you, God? How long must we endure? Why do you not answer your people? Do you not see what they do to us? Do you not hear our cries? Don't you understand? And God replies, no, you don't understand. Did you create the world? Can you order its ways? The world sits in this uneasy tension until the coming of Jesus, when God puts on flesh and becomes one of us. The theological word for this is incarnation. Fully God and fully human, without confusion, change, division, or separation. In practical terms, it means two things. God fully understands what it is to be human, and when we look at Jesus, we see God as God truly is. But those are just ideas. How does this play out in real life? If we follow Jesus, then we ought to be incarnational too. As God entered into our lives, so we enter into the lives of others. This is what Paul was talking about when he said, to the Jews I become like a Jew to win the Jews. To the Gentiles I become like a Gentile to win Gentiles. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. Paul entered into the lives of the people he served, connected with them, and spoke their language. His speech from the book of Acts shows this clearly. Here's a Jewish scholar, a Pharisee of Pharisees, and the writings that have come down to us from him are full of references to Hebrew scripture, deep theological connections. But in this speech before the Greek intelligentsia, he abandons all of that, leaves it all behind, and chooses instead to open with a comment on their polytheism. If this were religious radio, he'd be blasting away with both barrels, telling them that in no uncertain terms, those who worship false gods deserve a fiery end. But he doesn't do any of that. He says, I can see by your many statues and altars that you are very religious. So religious that you even put up a statue to the unknown God, just to make sure all of your bases are covered. Let me tell you what I know of that unknown God. And then he proceeds to quote their own songs and their own poets to them, showing them how their own culture and beliefs point toward a God bigger than a mere idol. Thousands of years of Hebrew scripture, culture, history, the story of the chosen people of God, he sets it all aside for a moment and becomes in that moment one of them, to reach them on their own terms. If it were today, maybe he'd quote Justin Timberlake. It's never too late to apologize. Never too late. I hate that song. Jesus is your umbrella, Ella, Ella, A, A. They get in your head. But just because Paul puts himself aside for their sake, that doesn't mean that he puts Christ aside too. We live in a world of political correctness, and you graduates, you are heading off into the very heart and soul of it. Political correctness says you can believe whatever you want as long as you keep it to yourself. That's not what Paul did. And that's not what Jesus did either. Jesus did not become incarnate and then go native. He didn't try to fit in or abandon his calling. What makes him so compelling is that unlike every other human being we've ever met, he is completely centered in who he is, within his purpose. He exists to do his Father's will, and the rest of the world can either help him or kill him, but that's where he's going. For generations, philosophers talked about the unbridgeable chasm between God and humanity. God is so holy, so perfect, so pure, that he could never come down into the dirt and the mire of our everyday lives. It would be beneath his dignity to dirty himself by entering our world. But Jesus showed us the exact opposite. There is nothing that God will not stoop to. There is nothing below God's dignity, if doing it might heal us. And in becoming one of us, God does not become broken. We become whole. It's as if he jumped into a cesspool, and instead of getting dirty, his presence transformed the cesspool into a spring. No amount of evil could overcome his goodness. No amount of darkness could put out his light. Everywhere Jesus went, things around him began to become what they were always meant to be. Whole. Want to heal the world? You graduates, you want to go out there and make a difference? Shut your mouths. Open your ears and listen. Learn to speak their language. Build relationships. See the world through another's eyes. And then, when the time finally comes to speak, you will have words they can hear, ideas that resonate. Not only that, I guarantee you, you will learn something new from them about the God you claim to follow. If you listen, they will teach you about God.